Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments, I'll be shining the spotlight on the Synod, focusing on new evangelization. I'll be joining Philippa Hitchin in Cyprus as she reports on a meeting of Catholic bishops from across southeastern Europe, organised by the Council of European Bishops' Conferences. You can hear her interviews with Maronite Archbishop Youssef Souaif and with the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fouad Toual. Finally, I'll be joining a communications officer from the Clifton Diocese in England, Tom Bigwood, in Rome to attend the plenary assembly of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. It's not every day that the Vatican gets a new council. The last time was in 1985 when John Paul II created the Pontifical Council for Healthcare Ministry. But this past June, on the feast of Saints Peter and Paul, Benedict XVI expressed the need to create a new organism in an effort to find new ways of promoting the gospel message in areas of the world where the process of secularization has produced a serious crisis. On this occasion, the Holy Father spoke of an eclipse of the sense of God. In October, the Pope unveiled the new council, highlighting how one of its specific tasks would be to favor the use of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. The man appointed to head the council was Rino Fisichella, an Italian archbishop since created cardinal, who at a press conference marking this event remarked how this council aimed to work closely with modern communications media at the explicit request of the Pope. Later in the month, at the end of the Pope's homily at the closing Mass on October 24 for the special Synod of Bishops for the Middle East, which focused on the pastoral challenges of the region, he mentioned how what was often evoked was the need for a new evangelization for this area of the world, quite a widespread theme, especially in the countries where Christianity has ancient roots. It was on this occasion that the Holy Father announced the topic for the next Synod of Bishops: new evangelization for the transmission of the Christian faith. But the next step in this story took place in the Vatican's press office on Friday when the working outline for this synod was presented. Chris Altieri has the story.
The lineamenta, the working outline, is a broad strokes overview of the chosen theme, which is sent to various church organs, including the synods of bishops of the Eastern Catholic Church's sui juris, the various bishops' conferences, and the unions of religious superiors general, all of whom are asked to review the document and make suggestions, which in turn will be incorporated into the Instrumentum Laboris, the Synod Assembly's working document. The outline is organized under three chapter headings that address the nature, the timeliness, and the scope of the new evangelization, the challenges of technique and organization in proclaiming the gospel, and initiation into the Christian experience. The document also has a concluding section that looks at Pentecost as the basis of the new evangelization, articulates a vision for the church of today and tomorrow, and celebrates the joy of evangelizing. The new evangelization, explained the Secretary General of the Synod of Bishops, Archbishop Nicholas Etarovich, ought to rekindle the original fire in Christians, a new missionary consciousness that involves all the members of God's people. The responses to the lineamenta are due by November of this year, and the Instrumentum Laboris will be presented ahead of the Synod Assembly, which is scheduled for the fall of 2012. I'm Chris Altieri.
Thanks there to Chris Altieri for bringing us this information. And now let's leave the Vatican and travel south to Cyprus. The unique role the churches in Cyprus can play as a bridge between Europe and the Middle East. That was the focus of the opening session in Nicosia on Thursday of a meeting of Catholic bishops from across southeastern Europe. The meeting, organised by the Council of European Bishops' Conferences, is discussing the importance of youth ministry as young protesters continue to demand democratic changes in countries across nearby North Africa and the Gulf region. Philippa Hitchin is in Nicosia following this encounter for us.
It's not just its geographical position, as close to Lebanon, Syria and Israel in the south as it is to Turkey and Greece in the north, that makes Cyprus such a strategic location. And it's not just the political divisions with 60,000 Turkish troops guarding the occupied north of the island, where the Greek majority was until recently forbidden to go. It's more a question of the rich cultural makeup of the country that has enabled it to be a vital crossroads between East and West down the centuries. Between the European Union, which it joined in 2004, and the Oriental Byzantine world, which is evident, yes, in the art and architecture, but above all in the religious history and traditions which continue to shape the nation today. While the Orthodox Church of Cyprus, one of the oldest independent Eastern churches, remains the majority Christian community, the small Catholic population is divided into Maronites, Armenians, and Latins, all three recognised under the constitution and represented in the Cypriot Parliament. The Latins, or Roman Catholics, numbering just a couple of thousand local inhabitants, plus some 20,000 migrant workers, form part of the Latin Patriarchate of Jerusalem, which also includes Israel, Jordan, and the Palestinian territories. That's partly why Pope Benedict chose to visit Cyprus last June, and why it was here that he met with church leaders from right across the Middle East to hand over the working document for the October Synod of Bishops. All of which explains why the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fuad Twal, is attending the meeting in Nicosia and has recently been appointed an official member of the CCEE, or Council of European Bishops' Conferences. I talked to Patriarch Twal about the role the churches can play as a bridge between Europe and the Middle East, and about the impact of popular protests across neighbouring North African countries. Patriarch Fuad Twal, tell us first of all the significance of your presence here representing Christians in the Holy Land at this meeting of the presidents of Southeastern Europe.
Really, it was for me a surprise and a pleasure at the same time when last year Cardinal Erede told me that he is thinking, to accept me as a member of this Bishop Conference of Europe, starting from Cyprus, because Cyprus is in Europe. I am in Cyprus, I am in Jerusalem, I am in Jordan. I can say we are in the Gulf, we are in the Arab regions, through the Patriarch, Catholic Patriarch of the Middle East, and through my Bishop Conference, which goes to Iraq and Gulf and all, with the Latin. So I think it is a good idea to make from Cyprus and from myself a bridge to put even the Middle East and the Church of the Holy Land with the European. It is nice that they have their own concern about us, about the Christians in the Holy Land. And now I think with the changes that we have in the Middle East, North Africa and so on, I think everybody must be interested, has some concern, preoccupation. We know that changes will happen, but we do not know what will happen after.
We've seen this wave of changes, of popular protests, particularly by young people across the Maghreb and the Middle East region. How is that affecting the churches and the people there in Jerusalem and in the occupied territories?
They are thinking about their moment, their time to follow this virus that started from North Africa, I am sure, because two, 3 days ago it started something in Hebron, and the policemen came with all the gas and not gas and so on, but it will come. Two questions. First one, what will happen after? So if they are looking for more freedom, more democracy, it is nice if somebody else can monopolize the change and the manifestations. That's something could be good, could be bad. We never know.
Is there a fear that it may lead to a greater Islamization of the region or not?
We don't know, because Muslim brothers and not even the Europe participated in this judgment. Nobody can say that he did something for this judgment. In the same time, we are asking ourselves about the international community, They never moved. Now they see and they say that this president, there were dictators and they must leave. And why before nobody pronounced these words? That's my question. Why it is a political of business and not for ethic or moral or conscience and so on? Now everybody is giving lessons. I think even Europe must, and the Occident and the international community must rethink their position, forget what they did once in the past, blacklist and whitelist, the good people, bad people. I think all we are bad and all we are good. And it is not necessary to make this distinction. That's a lesson for us, lesson for the political. To say that the friend of the past, they are not necessarily the friend of today, of tomorrow.
And our thanks there go to the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fuad Twal. The meeting he's attending is being hosted by the Maronite Catholic community in Cyprus. On her arrival in Nicosia, Philippa spoke with the Maronite Archbishop Youssef Swaif to find out more.
I would like to greet first of all the Radio Vaticana for all your effort and all your mission transmitting the hope and the love in the whole world.
You're here hosting this meeting of the Council of European Bishops Conferences from the southeastern region. Tell us first of all a little bit about the Catholic Church here, the Maronite community in particular.
The Catholic Church in Cyprus is not, let us say, a new reality in the island. It's a part of the history of Cyprus. For example, the Maronites themselves, they are living here since 1,200 years. And the Latin community, from many, many years, hundreds of years. So we are talking about communities which they are an organic part of the whole Cypriot society. And, of course, demographically, we are a minority, but we are contributing to the construction of the society to build in this wonderful island our country, the culture of love, of brotherhood, of peace, especially in the actual situation in which Cyprus exists now.
You have many Maronite villages which are now under Turkish occupation in the northern part of the island, don't you? What is the situation there today?
Actually, for us as Maronites, all our villages and all our parishes originally are, until now, are in the north of the island. And more than one, actually two of them, because they are four. We used to be a lot in the very old past during the, let us say, the Ottoman Empire. But now we have four villages. Two of them are military zone. It means to get access to those villages, we must have permission. And one of them, we celebrated a mass after last summer, 17th of July, in the village of Aya Marina, after 36 years where no one can enter, of course, through our relations, through different connections with the Holy See, with Cyprus government, with Lebanon, with Turkey, etc. So we reached the point to celebrate the Holy Mass after 36 years. Village was totally closed. So now, concerning the villages, of course, we still have our beloved old people living there. And because of them, now there is access to the villages. And personally, in the pastoral way, let us say, I am encouraging the people to go to visit their relatives and to celebrate liturgies and to make pastoral programs in the villages, especially for the new generation. Because if the new generation don't stay in contact, in link with the land, the source, it means maybe we will lose the contact one day. And so all of us, church and society and civil society, we must work in this direction to save the land and to save the villages and to save our presence. It means our mission and our role in that area and in the whole Cyprus.
You're particularly focused on working with young people, aren't you, and encouraging connections also across the different denominations with the Orthodox and with the Muslim youth.
It's really something very important to work with the young people. Since I arrived to Cyprus now 2 years ago, I was telling myself there is no young people in this diocese, in this land, but I was sure that there are. But they are waiting. They were waiting for something, for a call, for initiative to invite them and to listen to them. And thanks God, now we created the, let us say, the pastoral of the youth, and we are trying to make different programs with the young people, spiritual programs, social programs, and also we are planning with the Orthodox Church, also some metropolites, to make together some of these, let us say, pastoral and social programs. Of course, the idea is open to all the communities, Christians and non-Christians, to work together, because the youth must live in the new mentality, and through this mentality they can really build a new Cyprus, or maybe they can renew the old icon of Cyprus of conviviality, Cyprus of brotherhood, and Cyprus of now reconciliation, forgiveness.
Cyprus, of course, is now a member of the European Community. It's much easier for young people to travel abroad. It must be quite difficult to convince them to stay here, to build a future here.
In general, I don't have this, problem, and our young people don't face this challenge to immigrate, because in general, there is some social and economic stability in the country, which is very good. In general, the young people emigrate because of problems, of searching work, etc. So here in Cyprus, we don't have a serious problem concerning the immigration of the youth, because there is some stability in this field, in the economic and in the social life. So for this reason, we are trying to build something here inside the island, and especially among Catholic or the Maronite youth, because they need to discover and to know their identity. I am trying to insist on the openness, but the particularity, to be open to everyone, to build bridges and to make common programs, but in the same time to discover our Catholic identity, our Maronite identity, because in this balance and in this equilibrium state, we can really build seriously a society and also a religious situation in the whole country.
You talk about the need for reconciliation, the difficulties of living on a divided island. Can the church in any way help to support the political search for peace, reconciliation?
The church has an important role in this task, because first of all, it's a basic part of its mission. The church announced the peace. The peace of the Lord be with you. The peace of the risen Lord, of the resurrection. So peace means reconciliation, and of course it's something very important, and the church through its teaching and its acting and its orientation, it influences and it will influence, of course, the political field and areas in general, because, let us say, it's basic policy to make peace and to create peace in the society.
You're hosting the meeting here over the next few days. What do you see as the goals of this meeting? What would you like to achieve?
First of all, it's a brotherly meeting among bishops. And the nature of this meeting, it's the annual meeting of the CCEE Southeast Europe. And of course, we have in this zone of Europe many common elements in the ecclesiastical and in the social levels. And of course, we decided to open the subject of the youth now, exactly because the youth, especially in concerning Cyprus and the problem of Cyprus and the whole situation of Cyprus, and especially the future of Cyprus, the youth must have an important role for the future of the country through their new mentalities, new approach for really going over the past and all the injuries of the past. And for this reason, so our purpose in through this meeting is to focus on this pastoral of the youth for our local reality, but also for an important event which will be held in Madrid this year, the International Youth Days.
You hosted Pope Benedict here in Cyprus just a few months ago. What would you say, looking back at that visit, the most important fruits of that visit?
In front of any event, ecclesiastical event, we still not only remember, we still live deeply this historic and very special apostolic visit of His Holiness Pope Benedict the 16th in Cyprus. First of all, as a the pastor of the Universal Church, the Catholic Church, he was visiting a very, very small Catholic community. Who we are to have this, let us say, benediction and privilege to have the Pope, first of all. So it's really a paternal visit. Then, of course, concerning the dialogue between churches, it was not, let us say, theological dialogue, because the theological dialogue exists in a very well-known frame between the churches, but it was the daily dialogue, the dialogue of life, the dialogue of eating together, of praying together, of listening to the problem of each other, and sharing the ideas, the experiences. It was really something very new, a new step, a very distinguished step in the dialogue between churches, between the Catholic and the Orthodox Church. And of course, it could be an example for all kind of dialogue between churches and between religions also. Because the dialogue of life, the dialogue between the human being, strengthen so much the bonds and the relationship and help so much, even the theoretically dialogue, the theological or the spiritual, or the, say the human or intellectual dialogue. Now, for concerning Cyprus and the problem of Cyprus, the government of Cyprus, the president of Cyprus, invited the Pope to this island, the apostolic island, to also give the message of peace and reconciliation. And the visit of the Pope helped a lot, and I hope it will help so much in the future during the talks to reach a just and peaceful solution for Cyprus.
And you were listening there to Philippa Hitchens' interview with the Maronite Archbishop Youssef Souaif in Nicosia, Cyprus. Finally, on a totally different note, let's join one of the speakers at the plenary assembly of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, which took place this week here in the Vatican. He's the communications officer of the Clifton Diocese, headed by Bishop Declan Lang, a diocese which covers the West Country, as it's known in England, and that's essentially the counties of Somerset, Wiltshire, Gloucestershire, and the city and county of Bristol. The communications officer in question is Tom Bigwood. Tom was kind enough to come round to the radio and call on us, so I thought I'd ask him a few questions as to his talk to this group of communicators, among whom cardinals and bishops. He began by giving me the web address of his diocese, which is cliftondiocese.com, which, by the way, has received 14 media awards in recent years. I asked Tom what one could hope to find on this website.
Thank you. The main focus of the website is a news hub, let's say, where we update that every single day with news reflecting life in the Catholic Church in the west of England, really celebrating life in our communities. We also have an events section, and of course we also have the important practical information, parish directory, deanery directory, times of mass, locations of churches, and all the kind of biographical and practical information about the bishop and how people can contact him and how people can contact all the various departments and groups within the diocese.
Who's your bishop?
Bishop Declan Lang.
You're in Rome for a very special reason. I think you came to speak to a group of communicators. What exactly did you speak about?
Well, I spoke about the papal visit to England, Wales and Scotland and how that was done in a communications way in a local diocese, how we reported on the papal visit through our website, cliftondiocese.com, and how we built up to the papal visit in those months looking forward to it, building the excitement, really.
Were people really excited in the Pope's arrival?
People were very excited. If you listen to some of the audio clips, perhaps some of the ones I played at the meeting the other day, it really does. What we wanted to do was capture that excitement. So we were doing mobile phone podcasts direct from people's mobile phone in the crowd in Westminster, in the crowds around Buckingham Palace, and describing the scene as the Holy Father came by in his motorcade and was waving to the crowds.
That's kind of a novelty, isn't it? It's something that's only been happening for a very brief time. How do you find this new technical know-how?
Yeah, the new digital technology is something I think that the Pontifical Council is very much focused on. They're very much aware of that. And we talked a lot about that at the meeting the other day. And I think it's a great opportunity for the church and for many other organisations as well to get their messages out there and to get them out in a very, very positive way. And relatively speaking, it's quite simple to produce as well. Hence, you know, the ability for somebody on the end of a mobile phone to be relating that experience and their feelings to many people listening, well, listening back in the Clifton Diocese or listening wherever they may be around the world.
It highlights the emotional experience, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And what we were aiming to do, given the fact that the papal visit during the build-up, it was very clear it was going to be different to when John Paul II came in 1982, insofar as it wasn't going to be as easy for people to go and see the Holy Father because there were fewer events that they could go to. He was clearly only coming for a shorter time compared to John Paul II. So there were going to be some people who weren't going to be able to make it to the events in London or Birmingham or even in Scotland. So what we wanted to do was to kind of take them there in our own way. And we could do that through the new technology. We could do that through audio podcasting, and of course the papal visit official website, thepapalvisit.org.uk, they could take people there with their live video streaming, which I think was perhaps a first for a papal visit.
You were speaking to Catholics mainly.
We were talking to everyone who wanted to hear it. Obviously, the democracy of the internet means that anyone, anywhere, whether they're in the Clifton Diocese, whether they're Catholic, whether they're whatever they are, can go onto that website and experience what we're saying.
Do you think the attitude towards Catholics changed in any way after the Pope's visit to Britain?
I think it was a great opportunity for the Catholic community in England, Wales and Scotland to be open about what they do and what they believe and what they celebrate and how they celebrate it. And I think there was a great mind of inquiry from people both in the media who wanted to know what the Catholic Church stood for and what it talks about, and also from the wider community. And I thought there was a great reception to some of the things that were being said.
Warm thanks there to Tom Bigwood of the Clifton Diocese in England. And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget, we'll be back again at the same time tomorrow. Meanwhile, should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now. You've been listening to the English programme of Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.